and welcome to the seventh episode of the sixth season of the Ubuntu podcast. It's Wednesday, the 13th of April. No, it's not. And in this episode, we're going to discuss what's been in the news. We'll also be talking about the latest happenings in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages by using the chat facility on the website or the IRC channel. I'm Alan, and joining me this week are Tony.
Good evening.
I thought I'd catch you there. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad, are you? You're
right? Yeah, all right. Usual.
You're wearing your Ockham t-shirt?
Yes, I am.
The baby blue one.
Actually, my mother-in-law came around this evening and she said, have you got a new t-shirt? I said, no, I just never wear this one because I hate it. Laura, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
good. And Mark?
Hello.
So we're all back.
You
weren't here for a month.
Yeah, I was at a conference for a month.
Wow.
Yeah,
that's dedication.
Cool. Mm. Should we get on with it?
Yeah.
Go.
And here are the news. The first one is going to be told to us by a man called Alan.
Hello, that's me. So Google are forking WebKit, creating a new rendering engine called Blink.
Yeah, apparently forking is all the rage at the moment.
Everyone's doing it.
So what's Blink?
Well, it's their own fork of WebKit. So WebKit was originally KHTML, wasn't it? And Apple took it and created WebKit and gave that to the community, and it's open source, isn't it?
Yes. Yep.
For what purpose?
As a browser rendering engine, it used in their desktop browser, Safari, and the mobile browser, Safari. Mm.
And it's also used by Chrome.
Yeah.
And the Android browser.
Isn't it basically everyone except Firefox and Opera uses WebKit?
Yes, except Opera recently announced they were going to switch to it, and IE. Yeah.
And IE,
yes.
Oh, yes, and IE.
That other browser. Yes.
I keep forgetting about that. So the key part is that Google have been working on this for a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't just announced and we're going to do this. They've already done it.
No, that's Canonical's technique.
And apparently forking allows them to streamline that engine down, and they claim that they can get rid of some extraneous code, about 4.5 million lines of code.
That's quite a lot.
Quite a lot.
So I wonder why that's been sitting around there.
Well, it's because they've been, when they built Chrome, they built it to be multi-process, so each tab runs its own process and each extension runs its own process, so things don't, if one crashes, the whole thing doesn't fall over. And then the WebKit version, which is currently in development, is going to have that built into WebKit, which Chrome doesn't need because it's got it built into the browser, which means that they'd end up doubling up a load of functionality which they then not need. So one of the things that it's letting them do is not worry about that and just carry on building WebKit for how they need it to work.
So will this mean that web developers are going to have to take account of lots of different engines now? As well as previously, they really cared about Internet Explorer, WebKit, and Gecko for Firefox. Now are they going to have...
There were still differences, things that were supported in... Well, that worked differently in Safari to in Chrome to in mobile versions of the browsers. I mean, WebKit is still, you know, just because it pulls off, everyone pulls from the same code base or has pulled from the same code base up till now, doesn't mean that each browser that implements it doesn't do it slightly differently.
Yeah, it still needs to be tested on all those different browsers.
Yeah, well, or just, you know, designed to standards and file bugs.
Is this a good idea?
I don't know. In one sense, it seems like the right thing to do, because as well as Google then being able to streamline it from their point of view, Apple get to streamline it from their point of view, because they've been still pulling off the same WebKit code base, but that's had to have provision for things like custom JavaScript engines, because Google use their own JavaScript engine called V8 rather than using the one which was previously part of WebKit. So there's had to be stuff in WebKit which means that you can plug in a new JavaScript engine if you want to. So now Apple are planning on taking that out.
Because Opera have said they're going to use the new Blink.
Yes. Well, it's interesting. Engine. Initially, when they announced that they were switching rendering engine, they said that they were going to switch to WebKit. And then, lo and behold, Blink's announced, and oh, they're actually switching to Blink. So they obviously had an idea that this was about to happen.
Maybe, yeah. Yes. So that basically leaves Apple using proper WebKit.
And quite a lot of, for example, you can get lots of interface widgets. Like Qt has, there's a Qt WebKit implementation. So if you want to put a little bit of web content in your app,
right?
Then there's an embedded WebKit bit in Qt. And there's, I can't remember which company it was. There's a company who's... I don't know, there's probably quite a lot of companies actually who use it in their own sort of development environments.
Well, the Ubuntu things like the music store that's embedded in various playing applications, you presumably uses some rendering engine. I don't know what that's based on.
I don't know, whatever the default one is.
No. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No idea. I do not know.
Okay, something Alan doesn't know about Ubuntu. We finally found it.
No, I'm just admitting I don't know.
Okay.
Usually I don't.
Yeah, well, it is an interesting development, and one wonders what will happen to WebKit. Presumably Apple are now making T-shirts that say, don't blink. Don't even blink.
To be fair, we probably go back to where we were just before Chrome was released, which is Apple is the main player in the WebKit community, but lots of other people use it because it's open source.
Hmm.
But they might move to using Blink instead, if that's more, you know, friendly for the sort of applications that people are going to want to use it for.
I think we're going to see more of this. I think there's going to be other companies developing their own rendering engines, probably based on WebKit initially, for whatever their specific use case is, because Google are going to make Blink very Chrome specific.
Yeah.
And if you have a requirement which is not, you know, multi-process, doesn't need to interface with the Chrome bits or the Google infrastructure, so you don't need any of that, then maybe you'll fork WebKit and go off in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll have lots of forks of WebKit in the future.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, in other rendering engine news,
yay!
Mozilla has started a research project to create a new engine from scratch.
This isn't Scratch the programming language.
It's not Scratch the cat.
No, but interestingly, they have decided to write their new rendering engine in a new programming language.
This
whoopee.
It's a scary idea. The fact that they decided that not only understandably, it's probably worth them looking at a new rendering engine, bearing in mind that the rendering engine that they're using is Gecko, which is basically what they inherited from Netscape all those years ago.
Yes.
But the fact that they've said, okay, we'll write a new rendering engine to have a play around with, but no current language is suitable to our needs, so we're going to have to write a new program or use a new programming language that's specifically tailored to what we need for this particular project.
Which then means you have to write development environment and tools and compilers and stuff.
And if you want to get people, if you want to get people involved, if you want a community to build around it, then people have to learn a new language just for that project.
And they've got the money to do that. I mean, it makes you wonder what they could be doing if they didn't do this. You know, if they actually just switched to WebKit or they switched to Blink, what would they do with, you know, all that that big pile of money that Mozilla have?
Well, they clearly didn't spend it on marketing, because they have called their new rendering engine Servo, which is just the sexiest name on the planet.
Oh, well, not quite as sexy as the name of the language.
Oh, go on then. What's that?
Rust.
Wow. Did they decide against mold and fatigue?
one of the problems is that it's actually hard to get if you're developing a platform, for example, and part of that you need to have a browser.
Hmm.
It made sense, up until these two announcements were made, it made sense that you would make a WebKit-based one, because everybody else does, and the code is out there, it's open, and you know there are loads of people already working on it. But it's incredibly hard to get WebKit developers to work on the core project, because they're all already working for Google or Apple or ex-Nokia or some of these very large companies, and it's actually really hard to get people with, you know, core commit rights to WebKit, because they already work for these other great big companies. So maybe part of the reason why Mozilla are doing this is so that they can have all of the knowledge within their own company, and they're not reliant on people outside their company who work for Google or Apple or other competitors of theirs on rival products, perhaps.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's it for rendering engine news. I know, I'm sorry. There are some cool software projects, however, who are seeking crowdfunding.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So what's the first one on the list?
Geary, which seeks to build a modern email client for Linux, and it's from the same people who made Shotwell.
We have Mutt. What more do we need?
Indeed.
So this is Yorba, who are based in San Francisco. And yeah, they made Shotwell, and they've made Geary. And it, you know, it basically works. You can access your email, and it has a similar kind of view that you would get with most other email clients.
Thunderbird.
But it also has a kind of conversation style view that is similar
like
to
Gmail.
A bit like Gmail, yeah. Which, you know, you might think, well, I don't want to be dependent upon Google for my email.
Yeah.
So I could have a locally installed email client and point it to my IMAP server, and I've got the benefits of the Gmail interface without worrying about depending upon them or leaving my data in their cloud. So in order to develop this further, they've kicked off a Indiegogo campaign asking for $100,000.
Right.
It's got 2 weeks left, and they've raised $24,000 or so far.
I don't know much about the giving patterns of these sort of crowdfunding
It depends
projects.
On the project, really.
Right. You know, so you could get some a rush right at the end.
Often they do rush a little bit at the end. They do an additional promotion at the end to try and, you know, get them over the hump. But it entirely depends on the project. Whether, you know, games, for example, often peak really early if they're really, you know, well-known developers. Projects like this, traditionally, that I've seen, don't tend to do that. They slowly crawl up and slowly, you know, get towards the goal.
One thing that I reckon would give them would actually, you know, give them something other than being another email client on Linux would be if they would say they were going to support Exchange.
Yeah,
because loads and loads of companies use Exchange, and everywhere I've worked with Exchange, I've had to do some horrible hack to get an email client on Ubuntu that can talk to my email.
Or just use webmail.
Yeah, webmail isn't terrible.
Doesn't Evolution talk to Exchange?
Certain versions.
Yeah, a very old version which you can't get in the Ubuntu repositories talks to Exchange.
Excellent, because nobody uses Exchange anymore.
Well, isn't it partly, you know, the closed protocols and undocumented stuff, or is it?
Well, it's possible. There's a thing called Davmail, which does something clever and basically creates a local IMAP and CalDAV and CardDAV and LDAP proxy to Exchange Web Services, which is the thing that Microsoft wrote in so you didn't have to screen scrape it, like, which is what Evolution used to do.
Yeah, I remember it used to screen scrape the web interface, didn't it?
OWA. Yeah. Okay.
So it's possible to write things that talk to it. But there is, you know, reference implementations of this out there. And, you know, if you're going to write a new webmail client for Linux and you want it to be amazing and, you know, get people giving you money for it, then I imagine that that's the feature people really want.
There's no mention of that on their Indiegogo campaign. I mean, they have set out what they want to do.
Yes.
So that's not something that they're planning to do.
No.
And they've only got $100,000, which actually isn't a tremendous amount for...
I suppose so, if you think about...
How many developers you'd hire with that.
You said webmail, Mark. Actually a GUI.
It's actually a desktop
client. Desktop application.
Did I say webmail? Yeah. I didn't mean to. I meant email.
That's okay. I could tell what you meant. But it is a kind of Thunderbird replacement.
Yes,
that's
exactly
the market sector it's looking for.
Yeah, it's very lightweight. Yeah, it starts pretty quickly because, well, probably half the functionality is not there yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's got a way to go. I've tried it myself, and it's not finished. It's kind of disappointing. It's disappointing that they haven't reached their goal yet. Okay, they've got 2 weeks left, and they're a quarter of the way through. But I can kind of see why people aren't backing it, because do people really need a desktop email client?
That isn't Thunderbird.
Well,
or Mutt.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. Need one?
The Mutt thing is slightly facetious, but there are serviceable email clients like Thunderbird.
Yeah. Okay. This would be like starting an Indiegogo campaign to create a new video editor, for example.
Who would do that?
There are already plenty of video editors. Do you see what I mean? You know, but they've made a start, and potentially it could be a complete product, but...
Mm. Interesting. We'll see what happens.
Do you know, I would actually give them money if they worked on Shotwell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Shotwell.
If they finished Shotwell, I'd donate to that, but not an email client. Don't need one.
Fair enough. Okay.
So the other project is Easy Chirp, which is an accessible Twitter client.
This is really cool. It's another website you go to, like you'd go to log into Twitter.
Right.
But it acts as a Twitter client and has accessibility features so that people who use assistive technology can use Twitter more easily, because apparently the Twitter interface isn't very good at that sort of thing.
It's all very rich.
Most web
JavaScripty,
well, exactly. So things like knowing how many characters you've got left is a lot easier.
Yes.
Okay. So
they're at they were asking for $4,000 and they've passed that. And they're trending towards about 8,000.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So the thing, this has existed for a while, but because Twitter changed their APIs and knocked out a load of old functionality, they're having to rewrite a lot of the code. Yep. And so they needed the money to do that.
4,000 isn't an awful lot of money.
No, I think it's just one guy who develops it.
Right.
I thought Twitter were being nasty and not letting people use third-party apps.
They're not letting people use third-party apps if they decide that they don't do anything that Twitter's official apps don't do.
Right. So this is to protect their advertising revenue.
Yes.
Right. Okay. Right. Well, but this seems like a very worthwhile project.
Yes.
So it'd be interesting to see. Well, they've already met their target, so...
Well, it's got 6 days to go.
Cool.
And, yeah, it's at $4,700. So, it seems to be going quite well.
Cool. Yeah. Okay.
And finally in the news today, a group of companies are complaining to the EU about Google's apps having unfair prominence on Android.
Hang
on, they're complaining about bundled apps.
Yes.
Yeah, who are these shining examples of justice and freedom?
The group is called Fair Search.
That immediately sounds like they're good people.
Who among them are Nokia and Microsoft.
Oh.
So, right. Yeah, basically they're saying that...
Sorry, I just went to fairsearch.com and got an IIS under construction page.
Is it a little digging man?
That's brilliant.
So, yeah, basically they're saying that when you get an Android phone from whoever, all of Google's apps are really tightly integrated in. So if you're going to use... If you get a Google phone and you go to use a web browser, you've got Chrome there and you're going to use Chrome. And if you're going to sign up for email, you've got Gmail there and you're going to use Gmail. And Google Search is deeply integrated into it. So that gives them, and because they've got a big market share of the phone market, it means that they're getting an unfair advantage in the same, which is exactly the same argument which was used about Microsoft bundling
desktop
Internet Explorer and Windows Media Player with Windows.
And could easily be pointed at Apple and the integration with the iPhone as well.
I would dare say it could be.
But that's not the target they've gone for at the moment.
No, because Apple don't provide search
to other
services which generate revenue, whereas Google do. So when you buy a Google phone or an Android phone from a shop, you exchange money with the handset manufacturer, some money goes to them, some money goes to the store, and some license fees for the Google apps goes to Google, and apparently some money goes to Microsoft for patent licenses.
Yes.
But from that point onwards, any additional transactions you make beyond that, like the Google Play Store, money goes to Google.
Yeah.
You know, an additional apps you buy, a cut goes to Google. So I can kind of see why this lawsuit has come about. It does seem somewhat ironic, given the people who are bringing it about, yes.
Basically, yeah. Google has a greater market share in this area than any of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah. They could take Android and strip all the Google stuff out. It wouldn't be much left.
You can take the Android open source project, AOSP, and put that on your device.
Right.
Well, according to this article, it's not so much that it's bundled with Android OS, it's when you license from Google to be able to use things like Maps, you have to have them all and really prominent.
Right.
So you could ship Android without that, but you don't get to ship Maps and things.
Or the Play Store.
Yeah. So you lose a lot of it.
Yeah. So nobody... It's bundled in such a way that it makes it...
It's all
Android,
or nothing.
Android open source entirely unattractive for handset vendors.
Yeah.
Well... I think that's the end of our roundup of the latest news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content. And that can only mean one thing: more quizzes.
There it is.
So we've got some community news.
And events.
And some events. Dell have released another Ubuntu-powered machine for general sale in the US, and this time it's part of their Alienware range of gaming PCs.
Ooh. Mm. Right.
That's quite nice, really.
Ubuntu's a gaming platform now.
Yes.
Yeah.
The marketing is very heavy on the you can get Steam on Linux, therefore there's lots of games.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, they kind of messed up there. It said something like on their marketing, it said something like there's up to 25 games in Steam.
Wow.
Oh man.
Literally minutes of fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. But the good news is it's way more than 25. It's up to like 100 and something now.
And you can follow what is it? Linux Steam counter on Twitter to find out exactly how many it is.
Yes. Daily Linux Steam.
Linux Steam. Okay. So, can you buy these in the UK?
No. Nope.
Right.
I don't think Alienware was ever a really massive brand in the UK, because Alienware was a separate company and Dell bought it some time back, and it's always been. There are people who don't buy them because they're quite overpriced and.
Glowing and
exactly, with
transparent panels on the side.
And so, real hardcore gamers would probably buy a desktop machine that they might build themselves.
Yeah.
But this is an option. You know, if you're a parent looking for a gaming PC for your kids, you might be drawn to something like this.
Yes, right.
It's always nice to see, Ubuntu on mainstream developers, mainstream systems. Vendors.
Yeah. No, it's good to see.
Yes. Next in the community news, the Loco Council have announced that there won't be any CDs or DVDs for the 1304 release, as going forward the focus will be on LTS releases only. So the next set of CDs or DVDs will be 1404 in April next year.
So if you want a CD, you have to download the ISO yourself and burn it.
Yes, although it won't fit on a CD.
DVD then.
So DVD
or USB
or
stick.
USB stick. Who uses optical media these days? Yes, I know, loads of people do. So in the meantime, up until 1404, April next year, you'll still be able to order 1204.
Right, so if you're doing an event and you want to give out CDs.
Exactly, give out. And I would give out 1204 anyway, because it's pretty robust and still supported.
Cool.
Yeah.
And the next online Ubuntu Developer Summit, is happening in May. I was going to say on the 13th of May, but I imagine it's May 2013.
Possibly.
Yes, that's what that 13 is. Yeah, it's actually on May 14, 15, 16th.
Right.
So if you come on the 13th, you'll be a day early.
You will.
Finishes on my birthday.
Ah, there we go.
Nicely done there. Well
so
done.
This is the first of the 3 monthly developer summits.
The more regular developer summits, yes.
Or so the second.
We had the one a little while back, which was really... which was really sprung on everyone pretty quickly.
Yes.
This is the time in May when we would traditionally have had an in-person UDS.
Right.
So, they've listened to a lot of the feedback and trying to smooth it and make it more streamlined for this time. Three days from 2 in the afternoon until 8 in the evening UTC.
Excellent. So we can basically participate on IRC and Google Hangouts and those sort of things to get involved.
Yep.
Brilliant. Cool. And a man called Philip Bailu has decided that he wants to get more post and put his address on a blog, on a website, asking people who are using Ubuntu to send him a postcard.
Yeah. I thought this was really cool.
Yeah. It's kind of a positive, good news, feel-good story.
Yeah.
Trying to re-emphasize that there's still lots and lots of people... Mm. Are using Ubuntu, using it successfully, and that there's a vibrant community around it, despite what you may read elsewhere on
the
internet.
Maybe we should say
well done for turning that positive good news story on its head there. So the thing I found hardest about this was actually finding postcards that were local to my area. I went into the local W.H. Smiths in Farnborough, and I said, do you sell postcards? And they were like, What? What are they then? You know,
tourist information.
I'm not sure we have tourist information in Farnborough.
There's not a lot to see, is there?
Got a Farnborough somewhere nice like that.
Do they not have...
Well, no, because it says represent your area of the world. I don't want to go to someone else's area and give postcards.
Just because they have postcards.
Do they not have... Could you not print one out yourself that's just black and just says Farnborough at night?
Yeah.
Take a picture of your back garden.
Yeah, I think the biggest problem will be me finding a postcard of my local area rather than actually getting it to him or finding lots of people. But I think everyone should.
Maybe.
Yes.
No.
Uh-oh. There was an idea brewing there, but it didn't happen.
I'll come back to that.
Okay.
So there are some events as well. Up first, we've got U-Cubed 2013, which is the Ubuntu and Upstream Unconference. And that's the, I think it's the third one, and it's held at MADLAB, Manchester Digital Laboratory, in Manchester, UK. And it'll be on the 21st of April from 10 till 4. And it's pay what you want ticketing. So you go to Eventbrite.
That's a clever idea.
We'll do links and things. And the talks are aimed at all levels, and they're split into user space and kernel space talks. Sounds good.
It's always been a popular event in previous years, and I'm sure this year will be no different.
Yeah. So it's the third U-cubed. So is that U-cubed cubed?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, it's the power of nine.
You have to think of nine words beginning with U.
give me a minute.
And it's Les Pounder's dog's third birthday.
Make Munich, which is a German maker fair, is in Munich in Germany. On the...
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, well, you know, it could be a different
good place for it.
given it's called Make Munich, it makes sense to have it in Munich. It's on the 20th to the 21st of April, and there's a website we'll put in the show notes.
Cool.
And finally, for the events this time round, the Ubuntu UK Raring Ringtail Release Party will be held... indeed, will be held...
Wearing winged.
Will be held... at the Old Thameside Inn in London on the 25th of April, which is a Thursday evening.
Excellent.
Which, you know, is great for everybody who lives in London.
Yeah.
Well, as we always say, if you want to
have your own party in your own area, sit in your own garden with half a can of cider,
and
you're
CD.
More than welcome. Just don't tell us about it.
Thanks for listening. That's the end of our show. Join us next time when we'll be interviewing Michael Hall about core apps for Ubuntu Phone. We'll go over your feedback and we'll have some GUI love.
Yeah, I think our Michael Hall interview could be really interesting because there's been a lot of talk about core apps on Google Plus and things recently.
Yes.
Yeah, excellent. Right. Should we have some cake?
Yes.
And some tea?
Yes.
Right, let's do that. Bye.
Bye.